here now. Let's hear it, gang. Come on. Come on. Come on, let's hear it. And like I say everywhere I go in this great land, everywhere I go, I see evil and decadence creeping everywhere. Yeah. And I say to you, I could see guys out there. It's terrible, you know. I could see a guy out there, Trent, you know. He's in his Mustang with his chick. They got the car radio on. All of a sudden they hear this. Come on, I say, I don't want no religious show. He's got plans. Well, evil is as evil does. In fact, I remember my grandmother, you know, she had this thing on her, you know, had mantelpiece, you know. She had a real grandmother house. Oh, boy, when I think of it, I itch. You remember going to visit grandmothers, that kind of stuff? And the minute you got in, your jockey shorts would start to crawl up. And you'd hear the radiator go, shh. All grandmothers have radiators that drip. And, you know, it smells like, vaguely like furniture polish and Aura Dent. You know, something for your dentures. You could smell curtains. You know that smell of curtains? You know how curtains smell? Lace curtains. My grandmother would meet us at the door. And I'm a kid, you know, there's been a fight going on for 9 hours to get me and my kid brother to be happy about going to see Grandma. Oh, yeah, you know, we'd have to go. The old man, oh, he'd get bugged, too. Remember the old man and the John? He'd be in there, you know, and he's come home from work. Everything is working out great. You know, that instant of getting back into the nest. You know, the outside world, which is full of sharks, you know, full of bosses, the whole scene. The old man would hit the back porch, and you'd hear him run off the back steps, you know. Doom, 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 doom. You know, boom, the back door slams open. And the old man runs into the kitchen. And by the time he gets even with the refrigerator, his pants are off. Go ahead. Off comes the clothes. By the time he's in the dining room, he's running through in his BVDs. You know, I'm sitting there, there's my pop. Oh, look at the old man. He really picks him up, you know. Look at him. You know, I'll never forget the time Esther Jane came over to see me. After school, you know, we're sitting there. We got Lincoln Logs. When I think of the trouble Lincoln Logs cost me, I was given a set of Lincoln Logs by my Aunt Glenn for Christmas. And every 3 days, my mother would say, play with Aunt Glenn's Lincoln Logs. Now, play with them. All right. I'm making with the Lincoln Logs. And I'll never forget the time, you know, it's funny, Freud was right. With the Lincoln Logs, you can make all kinds of things. Not necessarily log cabins. Now, remember, I'm making this, you know, this fantastic thing, and the old man takes a look into the kitchen. I'm sitting on the little kid, you know, and I'm sitting on the linoleum. We had this kind of house. How many of you grew up in a linoleum house? I mean, we had a house that was paved with linoleum. All the way through it, you know. You could come right in the back door and skate right through the front. You know, it was the kind of house that my mother, every Saturday, would just hose down. She'd walk around. All go out the back door, you know. And so I'm sitting there on this blue and white linoleum, and I've got this Lincoln Logs, my Aunt Glenn's Lincoln Logs. I'm putting in my weekly solo time on this damn thing, you know. Oh, I hate it, you know, making a stuff. All of a sudden, the old man says, hey, he's talking to my mother. They're sitting at the kitchen table. He's got the sport page. And she's sitting there, you know, doing whatever mothers do, you know, this whole bit. And he says, hey, what is he making? My mother turns around and went, eek! Little did I realize that Freud was right. Deep down within us, we are constantly creating statements. The old man says, that's pretty good for a kid. He's looking down there. Thought, well, that was the first time that I realized that being obscene is cute. Like to know what I made, huh? On the floor in there in the Lincoln Logs, huh? Well, we'll send that to you when you're 21. And I'm guaranteed that you're an art student. I mean, I had a problem with that, too. I'm a kid, you know. And in the back of the magazines, they always had 50 poses for art students. It says something like, send the box 422 Starlet, Hollywood, California. You must be over 21. And I got myself a whole dollar's worth of postcards. Yeah, me and Schwartz one time just sent postcards to everything in the back of the magazines, you know. And I'll never forget the day that my old man opened the mail. There it was. It says, Gene Parker Shepherd. That's his name, too. He opens it up, and it says, Dear Connoisseur. Well, there was only one connoisseur in our house. The old man knew where he was. And 10 minutes later, I'm under the day bed, healing. But by the way, later, he was sitting there digging it, you know. I mean, he wrote in for the films and everything after that. But... Wasn't until years later I found that out. You know? But you know, these problems... Oh, incidentally, speaking of problems, I noticed that America's about to celebrate another one of its famous weeks. You know, every week, America has a nationwide celebration. As you know, last week was National Cap Week. How did you celebrate? Well, I know a guy that ran over 3 of them in Trenton. He went out looking, you know, with his Buick. There's all kinds of ways to celebrate. And, you know, cats come and cats go. And I read about that, you know, this is National Cat Week, and I said, geez, how am I going to celebrate it? Well, I'll listen to Peggy Fitzgerald. I heard that. And then, you know, and I thought to myself, well, what is next week going to be? I'm going to pass National Cat Week. I mean, you know, I had such a big time with National Pumpkin Week. National Oral Hygiene Week was a great week. Terrific week. I wonder if the Italians... celebrate, you know, only Americans think of things like that. National Oral Hygiene Week. Now, can you imagine Charles de Gaulle celebrating that? But you can't imagine Americans. And I wonder if the Italians, say, have a National Shave Under Your Arms Week. Only Americans think of that. National Oral Hygiene. Sit down and have a little Micrin, you know, a little vodka in it. You know, sit and drink a couple of gallons of Listerine. Well, you know what this week is, friends, in case you're interested?
No,
Chef. Well, that's his best. That's the ad lib he's been working on for a month. Let's give him a hand. Very good. Very good. You have just heard a classic example of true Jersey slob humor. The pure form is getting difficult to find. That was it. And if we're all quiet, we can hear his pimples mating. Stick with it, kid. Look back at how he's just a pile of coleslaw, you know. Didn't know I was a pro, did you, kid? Well... Well, the other one turns to him and says, why, you would pick it. You would open your mouth, Marty. Everything was going good. Downhill all the way. Well, you know, seriously, though, this week, beginning midnight, it's about 10 minutes to 11 or so, just about an hour and 20 minutes, we're going to begin to celebrate National American Hobby Week. Let's give them a hand. And I'll bet a lot of guys out there already got a head start. All kinds of hobbies, you know. I never could see anything in stamp collecting. You know? In fact, I'm thinking of taking up a new hobby. Oh, baby. And You know, this thing of National Hobby Week, I heard about that, and I thought to myself, National Hobby Week, gee whiz, you know? There's all kinds of hobbies. You know, there's, for example, one of the most interesting modern American hobbies is kvetching. Yeah, the creative whiner. Oh, yeah, have you ever heard of whining as a hobby? Well, some people have made it into a career. Matter of fact, a couple of comics, you know, it's a whole bit, you know, about how the world is so rotten to them, you know. In fact, I remember as a kid, you know, speaking of kvetching. Or don't you know what that word means? Well, it means what it sounds like it means. Say kvetch. Well, what does it sound like, honey? That's right. That's kvetching. Well, kvetching is when, you know, you're in the kitchen, see. We discovered this technique early. You're about five, see. At this time, you are just a blob of silly putty with feet. I mean, it is totally unformed, you know. I mean, blank eyes. You know, later you learn to fake it. You know, knowledge in the eye. At that time, you just honestly admit you don't know what the hell the world's about. And you do things very basically. About every 30 seconds, someone says, "Not again. All right, take him in there." Now, when you grow up, you have all kinds of euphemisms for that very same thing. You know, like, would you like to wash your face? You know, you never say that to a five-year-old kid. He'll do it. He'll wash his face. Oh, yeah, you know, that's... Right now, at this moment, let us salute everybody who can hardly wait to get to the next Howard Johnson. They've just passed a sign that says, Howard Johnson, 38 miles. And now they're getting panicky. Good luck out there, gang. They can hear it, you know. Good luck. Stick with it. Now, all of a sudden, the guy hadn't even thought about it. Now he's thought about it. Now... Oh, life is tough, isn't it? You know, you're 5 years old when you first discover the kvetch as a basic ploy. You know, you're standing next to the kitchen table, comes up about like this. Your mother's fixing the meatloaf. She's got on the red cabbage. And she says, all right, now go in and wash your face. Get ready. Daddy will be home very soon. Get ready for dinner. You know, you washed your face last Tuesday. And she says, what did you say? She says, if you don't stop whining, I'm going to tear you from limb to limb. Ooh, there's nothing that bugs you more than whining. Have you ever gone out, men, with a whining girl? Oh. In fact, if we're quiet now, we'll hear a few virgin whines. Yeah, what did we come here for? Ooh. Oh, yeah, men know all about this. You know, you get all dressed up, you know, and you've got gas in the car. It's got Simon eyes. You go and you pick this chick up, you know, and you've prepared in your mind this whole big evening, you know, we're going to go to the Route 3 drive-in, have a big night, you know, the whole bit. You pick her up, and she comes down and sits in the car. Say, how are you, baby? Isn't it a great night? And she goes, Already she's having a hair fit. You know, there's a little slight moisture in the air, and now she's bugged. It came down on the top of her head. It's like all of nature is a plot against this chick's crummy hair. You did it. You said, well, what's the matter? She's looking out. You said, well, what's the matter? And already, the padding in your Robert Hall sport coat is beginning to droop. You know it's going to be one of those crummy nights. I'm sorry, fella. I know it's tough. Well, you can't win all of them. You just wish you could win once, wouldn't you? You know, and I'm thinking about this National Hobby Week. I thought to myself, oh, boy, listen, I tell you, I had one of the great embarrassing moments. I mean, terrible. It had to do with a hobby. And this was just 2 weeks ago. Now, you know, hobbies are personal. They're very personal. Now, how are you going to judge a guy? How many times have you looked in Popular Mechanics? You know, you ever see Popular Mechanics, a great magazine? You know, you look in the back, it says, opportunity for travel. Be a railway postal clerk. That's a lot of traveling, all right? You see the country a great way, you know. Yeah, have you ever seen that ad in the back? And you take a correspondence course or something. You know, I've often thought, I think I'll do it, you know. Then there's one where this guy is looking out and he's pointing out at you, see, and his name is J.E. Smith. And he says, there is a great future for you in radio. And underneath that, it shows this little smudgy photograph. It says, M.L. of Dismal Seepage, Mississippi, writes, I earn up to $4 a month extra in my spare time repairing superheads. I keep seeing these things, you know, and I say, geez, I've missed my career. You know, let me tell you, one time I knew my uncle, for example, one time, he wrote in, you know, the Depression, see, I'm a little kid, old Uncle Al. Uncle Al played the fiddle. And there wasn't much call for fiddle players, especially Uncle Al's type. He was a bad fiddle player. You know, Uncle Al, he had about 20 kids. My cousin Buddy, my cousin Donnie, my cousin Cullen. Oh, what a klutz that one was. Oh, my cousin Merle, my cousin Gladys, he had a whole great big string of them, you know. So Uncle Al decides to go for a job. He'd been on relief. He was on relief from about the Boer War on. Now, some guys work in relief as an art form. You know, like other guys work in marble and clays. Uncle Al, you know, every week, so he decides he's going to get a job. And he writes, and this is a true story, he writes in the back of one of these magazines, it says, you know, big ad, and it shows this man standing there with big, wide shoulders. He's got a lapel. It's made out of velvet. He's got a cummerbund on. He's got this sharp, dynamic look. And out of his mouth comes a balloon. This big balloon that says, men, thousands of your friends are waiting to buy handmade, ready-made, tailor-made type suits from you door to door. Thousands of your friends. That meant my Uncle Al's brother, Uncle Carl, who had never bought a suit in his life. You know? And so Uncle Al, I'll never forget this, Uncle Al sent in the coupon, and the coupon said, Virgin Territories open to the right dynamic sort of type. And that was Uncle Al. Dynamic. You know, he's that kind, you know, he was the kind that combed his hair straight back like Jimmy Cagney. In very early pictures. But he didn't have Jimmy Cagney's pizzazz. In fact, my Aunt Glenn, who was his wife, used to hit him with grapefruits. You know, he's that kind of guy. And so he sends in the coupon, and I'll never forget this, though it was one of the most embarrassing moments, one of those terrible moments in the family. The old man, Sunday, he's sitting in the living room. It's a typical father look. He's got the Chicago Trib around him. He's in his Sunday stupor. He used to sleep. He'd just keep falling off. He'd wake up. My mother's sitting over there in the paisley chair. She's knitting or something. And there is a knock on the door. My mother opens the door and she says, "Why, Al, we didn't expect you. You were here last Sunday. And the Sunday before that. The Sunday before that. Well, come on in." And in comes Al, and he's got a cardboard suitcase. And it says, "Dynamic Gentleman Clothes." And he walks in, and he says, "I'm here to talk to your husband." It's the first time he ever called my father your husband. "So I'm here to talk to your husband about his new suit." The old man comes too. Al opens his cardboard case open, and he says, "Shep," it's what they call the old man. He says, "Shep, take a look at that suit." It was the free sample. And you should have seen it. It was made out of lamé. It was magnificent. Sat in there. He put the old man, put the coat on. My father stands there. Puts the pants on. Rolls it up. He goes in the kitchen, looks in the mirror. Uncle Al says, "You can have one just like it in 2 weeks." My father says, "Yeah, how much?" And he says, "Well, we can arrange time payments." And it suddenly dawned on my father that Uncle Al was selling suits. He thought he was showing him his new suit. Now, you've got that difficult problem. Do you buy a suit and get a rotten suit? Or do you help Uncle Al support 37 rotten kids? What do you do? Well, the old man did what all cowards do. He bought a suit. I'll never forget the day it came. It came in the mail. It was the first suit I ever saw in my life. And the old man was, fascinated. He opened it up. It's all in tissue paper. It came with hangers. Little pieces, swatches of cloth in case you had to repair it. It was the first suit I ever saw made out of cheesecloth. You think they're coming back? Well, the old man put his cheesecloth suit on. You could see through it. You could see it says BBDs here, They put the suit on, and what's worse, it scratched. You could hear it scratching his kneecaps, even when he stood still, Well, 3 days later, he is using the suit to polish the olds. Well, these are the little family crises that come about in a family that is hung on reading the Popular Mechanics magazine. Little things happen like that. And the other day, it's been 2 weeks ago, speaking of hobbies, 2 weeks ago, I'm in this fantastic restaurant. Beautiful. It's over here on the east side. Now, for those of you who don't get a chance to attend many east side advertising world luncheons, you do not know the origin and the beginning of one of the new... it's a new religion in America. It's a religious experience. You walk into these restaurants. You can smell. You can just smell the credit cards. And the goodwill that just flows, ebbs, flows. And you can hear these voices. The kind of voice that is always heard in East Side French restaurants at 1:30 in the afternoon, and the ads were like, "Hey, Chucky. Oh, my God, Chucky, I hear you've got another Egg Harbor. My God. That crisscross, I knew it wouldn't make it." And I'm sitting in this great world there. And I'm sitting with a client. A prospective sucker. It's very tense. See, and here's the salesman sitting over there, and we've been drinking martinis, and the prospective client, he's the kind, with a little curly gray hair, and it's a little bit blue, that kind. He's got a red face from owning this beautiful sailing yacht, which he spends all of his weekends on in Maine. One of these dynamic types who tells you everything about your business. He'll say things like, "Why, yes, of course, I've heard your program. Well, if I were doing your show, actually, here's where you make your basic mistake." You keep saying, "Yes, that's true. Love to have you have a show. But it'd be great. Terrific. And just to make conversation, I said, how's the boat? Oh, by God, there's nothing like a boat. You get out in the boat and you stand on the fantail. You stand on a poop deck there. And three ladies turned and looked at it and said, such talk. And you stand up there and he says, and the wind's blowing in your hair. You know, I have no hobbies at all. It makes me feel vaguely inferior. Where have I missed the boat? I don't collect stamps. I do not collect coins. Except there's always a big pile of them in this pocket. There are always pennies and nickels. That's my coin collection. You know, and he's got boats. He flies a twin beach. He does home brain surgery. Yeah, well, it's that kind of guy, you know, very dynamic. He pulls his own teeth. You know, and he's that very dynamic. You just know he's got about seven little apartments all over town. You know, he's got other hobbies. You know, me and the salesman, we're both sitting there, you know, trying to get this guy going, see? So I said in the middle of a hobby, you know, and he says, oh, yeah, he says, nothing like a hobby. He says, you know, this, boy, I'll tell you, you can really tell a man by the kind of hobby he has. I said, yeah. Sir, that's true. Yep. He says, I can't figure out some of these nutty hobbies. He says, you know, some nutty people actually collect match covers. And he hit me in the belly button. I am a match cover collector. And he categorizes me as a nut. I says, well, yeah, that's it. True, some nuts collect match covers. Well, I'll be honest with you. I have not collected a match cover since my 21st birthday. But way down somewhere out in Indiana. In fact, a month ago, I got a telephone call from my mother. You know, every week we talk on the phone. You know, it's traditional. I go into this phone booth on the corner of 47th and 5th. They've got one of these booths, you know, and it says, have you called mother? It always shows this nice little lady looking out. You know that lady they always have in the ads with the gray hair, you know, it's dyed blue. You know, her hair's all nicely put up because she's got store teeth. It says, your mother is just a phone call away. I say, yeah, I know. There's a sign that says, have you called mother? And somebody underneath it wrote something. I can't even tell you what he wrote. You should have heard what he called mother. I don't know about his mother, but wow, you know. You know that there are now 47 different ways to say mother? We'll let you think about that. You'll get that when you get back in Hackensack. Anyway, you know, I get my mother on the phone, and she says, Gene, and I said, yes, Mom. She says, do you want your matches? I said, do I want my what? She says, I've still got seven bags of match covers under the basement steps. Now, I didn't want to throw them out because you collected them. I said, oh, yeah, well, Ma. And you can't get yourself to throw them away. It took me 12 years of walking along gutters kicking cigar butts at the age of 9 to pick up these match covers. And she says, I'm going to throw them away if you don't want them. She says, unless, I'll tell you what I'll do, I'll mail them to you. Do you know 7 tons of match covers arrived at the office the other day? And the boss says, what's this junk? I said, well, they're worth money.
Concludes tonight's salute to Hugh Downs. One of America's great men. By the way, friends, since it is National Hobby Week, I'm going to tell you, though, what my real secret... I've got a personal secret hobby, and I think it has to do... You know, there's such a thing as a mental hobby. They're the worst kind. Oh, yeah, yeah. No, no, really. You know, some guys collect stamps. Other guys collect money. Other guys collect chicks. Other guys collect divorce papers. Yeah, it's, you know, all kinds of little collections going on here. But, you know, I've got a terrible hobby, and I think it stems from my professional work. Whenever I watch a TV show or a movie, I instinctively, when a guy comes up with a gag, I watch it, see, and I hear it. And I instinctively rewrite it. How the joke should have been. I wish I could get, I wish I could just laugh. But I can't. My mind keeps saying, oh, he should have said so-and-so. Like I'm watching the Jackie Gleason show. Typical example. Here's Jackie Gleason, see? Standing there. How sweet it is! He's standing there with the cup. And out comes his guest. It's George Gobel. And George Gobel walks up. He stands, you know, he looks like a little duck. He's cute. And Gleason is standing there looking at him, and he says, well, how have things been going, George? George says, well, I've been having trouble with my typewriter. And Gleason says, you've been having trouble with your typewriter. And automatically, my joke machine, this crummy little thing in my mind says, uh-oh, here comes the jokey. How's it going to work? So he says, I've been having trouble with my typewriter. And Jackie Gleason says, well, what's been the trouble? He says, well... The O's. I've been having trouble with the O's. Jackie says, trouble with the O's? What do you mean? He says, yes, they've been printing backwards, upside down. I laugh, you know. I say, that could have been better. My mind automatically sees the way the scene should have been written. Here's Jackie Gleason. Here's Gobel. Gobel says, Jackie, I've been having trouble with my typewriter. Jackie says, trouble with your typewriter? What's the trouble? He says, well, the S's, they've been printing backwards. He says, printing backwards? Yeah, I've been typing S backwards. See how rotten I can be? Isn't that terrible? I'm sitting out there and I say this, and I fall off the chair. Oh, what a great joke. You know, and I say to myself, oh, boy. Holy smokes. Then I say, of course, you know, I hate puns. But I keep making them up. Now, what do you do about that? You know, I can't even tell you the worst pun that I ever invented that had to do with with Buster Keaton and Onassis. Better not tell you that. Homer contemplating a... I better not tell you that one. I invented it. And I, you know, I have a feeling that one day when we arrive before the great bar of justice, and that, you know, the eternal judge looks down, and he's got the book out there, and he's going to say, Shepherd, what about that S business? How did he know about that? He says, we listen. It's going to be a special hell for people who've got that pun shtick going. You know, and we had a guy in the Army. I'll tell you, you want me to tell an Army story? Well, I'll tell you, did you notice today there was a lot of talk on the air about Veterans Day? And I look on the news, see, and here are all these guys marching with flags. You know, they got the funny little hats that look like bananas on them. They're little badges. I'm sitting there, you know, and there's a guy giving a speech. After that comes on the afternoon movie. And boy, it was the worst movie. You know, it's the kind of movie that Sonny Tufts made. You remember when Sonny Tufts was in all these G.I. movies? You see him in the afternoon right after the Bowery Boys movies. That's a great scene, you know. And here's Sonny Tufts. And he's a cadet. You know, it's the idea of Sonny Tufts flying an airplane is scary enough.
But here's Sonny Tufts. He's walking along the line, and you see all these training planes, see? Sonny Tufts is walking along, and he's talking to his friend, who is Robert Preston. And they're both air cadets. I'm sitting there watching that. And it's on Veterans Day. Watching the scene. And then, without any warning, a little thing ticked over in my mind that said, yeah, the real stories of what scares GIs are never told in the movies. Never. You know, they always show these guys storming a pillbox. You know, they're charging up there, and the young second lieutenant is Van Johnson. And you knew that Van Johnson came into this company, and he knew nobody. And everybody hated him. But you knew that before it was over, they were going to love him. And you knew that Sidney Poitier was going to save James Whitmore, who's the Southern Sergeant. You knew it, you know. And these are classic movies, see. Well, here's the way it really works. One day, the Army has been forever now. I mean, but forever. When you're in the Army over a year and a half, at that point, at about 18 months, something flops over in your mind. And all your past is erased. It's gone. There's nothing left. In fact, I'm always amused when I see these movies that show these guys they're in a foxhole, see? And one is talking to another one, and he says, Manny, would you like to see the pictures of my glove? Oh, look at that. Not once. Not once in 3 years in the Army did anybody dare in Company K to show the pictures of whoever he was running away from. Oh, yeah, everybody at Company K had something else going, you know, after 3 years, you know. And all that stuff in the background was gone. And there was a nuttiness happened out there. How many of you guys remember this? For some reason or other, people got the idea that it would be great if they sent you, wherever you were, the hometown newspaper. I'll never forget this, you know. I'd be standing in up to my knees in mud, you know. It's mail call. You know, nothing but dog tags, pair of GI underwear. I was wearing nothing but heat rash. You know, Gasser's next to me. He's leaning up against the tree. And up here is the corporal. He's calling out the mail. This is Shepherd JP, PFC, 1609894. Boom! 7 pounds of the Hammond Times. Well, you know, there was only one use we found for it. Yes, we wrapped potato peelings in it. You know, so these things, you know, but the way the Army really works, the kind of fears that really operate in the Army are never relayed to you out of novels. I'm in a radar company. Now, you all heard about radar, see? And you see it once in a while when you go, for example, if you've ever gone all the way out to Montauk, and there's a big sign and it says something like the 723rd Radar Signal Air Warning Company, and it's pointing up into the woods. And you see nothing but woods. Well, if you had gotten out of your car and gotten down and been very quiet, you could have heard the moaning of the GIs who have been assigned to a lonely radar company. There's nothing like it. I mean, it's the nearest thing to taking a monastic order. Oh, yes. In fact, there's a lot of parallels. Boy. Yeah, first of all, we wore sackcloth and ashes. They didn't give us real uniforms like the rest of the Army. Everybody else had these great Eisenhower jackets. We had these things that hung down and bloused out. You know, I had the big things on the knee, the knees hung down. We had the shirts that rolled up and the collars. And it was the Signal Corps. Even our colors. Everybody else has great colors, like the infantry has this sky blue. You know, the Air Force has those great orange, that orange and blue color. And the artillery was blood red. What do you think the Signal Corps' colors are? I can't tell you on the radio. We had a description for it. It was very close. Yeah, oh, it's terrible. But so, week after week would go by in the radar company. And there would be nothing but the sound of this radar machine, or this great big machine. Just looked down at us. And it was all made out of surplus tin. Arms drooped. This thing, when it was made, when we had it, was reputedly worth $1.735 million. $1.7 million. And it never worked. Never worked. It would just go around and go, In 3 years, we never once saw anything on it. Nothing. Just a little scope going, Oh, yeah, you know, it's always funny to me, you know, whenever I see in the movies, it shows these guys working a scope like they're in a submarine, and they've got the earphones on, and they always look so dynamic. They're always saying, hello, Roger 7, position 8, a pip at 337 degrees, coming in at 14 miles, and at 6,000 feet, and he's carrying four bombs, he's got twin engines, and he's got the left rear molar that's got a filling in it. Here he comes.
What dreaming. Our radar set couldn't even pick itself up. But it was ours, and we loved it, see. Oh, yeah, 37 guys in Company K, and we would work in shifts. You know, there'd be one bunch of guys would be on from 8 o'clock until 4. And they just sit there, three of us, with the scopes. One has got the elevation scope, the other's got the azimuth, and here's in the middle is the direction scope. And we just go like this. Hour after hour. Little earphone, see? Next to me would be Gasser. I'm on the direction scope. Gasser's on the azimuth scope. And over here is Zinsmeister. He's on the elevation scope. And we had these cans. We'd talk back and forth to each other, see? It's going, get out of there, baby. Yeah, it's a new hobby. It's going, you know, the scope is going around. And we had, there was a thing in the radar set called the keying frequency. Oh. You ever heard that old canard about the Chinese water torture? You drop a drop of water on a guy's forehead like a million times, and all of a sudden he flips his cork. Did you ever hear, you know, you heard about that. I'll never forget the time I'm a kid, I'm nine, I'm in the bathroom, you know, in the bathtub, and it's dripping. I stick my head on. I'm testing it, see? Get out of here, pal. I'm sorry. What the hell? I don't buy insurance when I'm working. And it's dripping on the head, you know. You can have it. Take it home. It's good for funds. Here it is. Get it out of the way here. You never know what it is. And it's dripping on the head, see? And I was reminded of that fantastic scene. I am in the radar company. And the keying frequency did this. Just went... How would you like to hear that 24 hours a day? 7 days a week. 365 days a year. For 3 years. It's all around you. You just hear this thing. Just buzzing. You can just feel it in the air. And so we're sitting up there one day, the three of us, me, Gasser, Zinsmeister, earphones. It's going,
And Gasser, I noticed Gasser is white as a sheet. He's sitting over there and he's sweating, see? I say in the cans, what's the matter, Gasser? Gasser says, did you hear the rumor? I said, what rumor? He said, you didn't hear the rumor. I can't talk about it. I said, what happened, Gasser? You mean somebody saw an airplane? He said, no, worse than that. And over here is Zinsmeister. He's been asleep now for a year and a half, see? Zinsmeister slowly comes to and says, what'd you say, Gasser? Is it what I heard? And Gasser says, yeah. Do you think it's true? And I said, what, fellas? Tell me. And Gasser said, did you hear the rumor? What these ultra-high frequency waves, what they do to you? I said, no, what? I said, no. He said, oh. He said, you know, and they give those crummy bums in the Air Corps, they give those guys 50% higher pay for just flying in an airplane. We ought to strike for four times pay. I said, what does it do to you? He said, I can't talk about it. By now, you know, what does it do? You know, I can't figure what. And then Zinsmeister says, Shepard, well, I'll tell you what it does to you. I can't talk about it. By now, you know, what is it? And I'm very innocent, and the thing is just going, And all it looks, you know, up to this point, it just looked like a bunch of junk. Now it's getting sinister. I can see those arms spread out against the sky like some giant fingers. I'm sitting in the middle. And down around on the base is Edwards walking around. He's got his GI shorts on, you know, and he's got his dog tags hanging. And he was our ground man. See, the ground man always is walking around and he's got the cans. And in case we spot anything, he yells for the rest of the guys to hide. That was his job, see, and he's got the earphones on. And I look down there and I see him, see, and I said, what's up? And he's looking up and he says, I'll tell you what happens. He says, you know that chick? I says, yeah, yeah. He says, well, you know that one that you've been writing to? I says, yeah, yeah. Forget it. I says, what do you mean? And then it dawned on me. I had heard that rumor too. But I thought that they were talking about something that went on down at the clinic. It's the radar set. And that night, we're all sitting in the mess hall. By now, you know, it's spread out through the entire company. What happens after you've been next to the ultra-high frequency for over 12 minutes? We've been there 3 years. I mean, there's no hope. You know? So, boy, you know, we're sitting down in a mess hall. You don't. Wouldn't this make a great half-hour film on combat? What the guys really face, see? So we're sitting in the mess hall. You know, we got the SOS there. You know, we're spooning it in. Yeah, yeah, and I got my bowl of liquid Jell-O is there. And, you know, we got the heat rash. We're sitting there and we're sweating. And Gasser is sitting down at the end of the table. And Gasser says, in a loud voice, he says, you know what I'm going to do, guys? I'm going to go to town. I'm going to town tonight. I'm getting a Class A pass and getting out of here. And I'm going to try it out. Hey, something's happening up there. Great. Let's give him a hand. And Gasser says, I'm going to try it out. And Edwards says, you mean... Gasser says, yeah, somebody's got to be a volunteer. That's typical of Gasser, selfless. Always thinking of the other guys. And Gasser goes out that night, he's all dressed up in his suntans. You know, and he wades through 7 miles of swamp. Finally gets to this town. We had this little town where we were stationed near. It was 42 miles away. Had 12 people in an SO station. Gasser goes to town. And, you know, the camp life goes on at night and the thing is humming. Guys are sitting there polishing their belts. Other guys are polishing their shoes. And there's lights out. And the night shift goes on, midnight. And I'm in the tent, see? I share a tent with 5 other guys. These are 6-man tents. They're pyramidal tents, they call them. And, you know, Edwards is over there, and I'm on the end. Gasser's over here, Zinsmeister. And I'm lying under my mosquito bar. And I hear the mosquitoes all around me, and I'm just lying there, half asleep. When I hear coming up the duckboards, our hero. You know, he heard clunk, 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 clunk. And he walks into the tent. There's silence. And I go up on one elbow. And I can hear Zinsmeister stirring in his pad. Edwards sits up. Zinsmeister says, "Gasser, how about it?" "Well?" Silence. You just hear Gasser taking off his shirt. You hear a little dingle of the dog tags. You hear a muffled undertone. Gasser using that same word he always used. Zinsmeister says, "Talk to us, Gasser. What happened? Tell us." And Gasser goes over and we had this kerosene lamp. He lights the lamp and you see he's got a shiner. It's hanging down like that. He's got a black eye, you know. Gasser says, "It works." And Edward says, "You mean we're all in trouble?" He says, "No, that isn't what I mean." And then it dawned on us. And Zinsmeister says, "Well, what happened tonight, Gasser?" He says, "Her old man gave me this." And Edwards fell back on a bunk and says, "Oh, am I relieved." And so that moment, we suddenly realized that the myth was part myth and part truth. Part yes and part no. Until that one night that Zinsmeister came home from a 3-day pass in Red Bank, New Jersey. He had gotten away. Yeah, he lived in Red Bank. I didn't know that people lived there. And Zinsmeister came back from a 3-day pass, and he came back married. And Gasser said, "What happened?" He says, "You lied to me." He says, "The old man caught me." And he says, "That crummy radar set. I was counting on it." That was an early pill. Didn't work. But you know, it's funny. Somebody here tonight said to tell the story, speaking of hobbies, to tell the story about the time I got my tonsils out. You know, that whole business of getting your tonsils out, this is a hobby, by the way, with a lot of people. My Aunt Glenn had 23 kids. And in fact, they used to go and have a group plan. Yeah, they used to do them in bunches. And I'm a little kid, you know, and I had never encountered medicine before, see. Medicine in my life consisted of looking into, well, medicine cabinets in other people's houses. You know, I used to love to go. You'd say, where is it? And they'd say, "Oh, it's back there." And you turn around, and you go in, and you look in the medicine cabinet. You know, how many of you are today secret medicine cabinet voyeurs? You know, you're at this very official party, you know, and these official people, one of those ladies that wears long velvet, hostess gowns, you know, the guy with the gray and all that. And you're up there, and you open the medicine cabinet, you take them out. It says, "In case of fit." Say, "Which one has fits?" You know, suddenly you realize your boss has fits. You suspected it all along, you know.
Well, my idea of medicine, you know, up to that point was just basically that kind of thing, see? And I was very, very skinny. You wouldn't believe it. I weighed like 8 pounds. Yeah, and I was 5'8". Yeah, you know, I was a little string, see? Absolutely skinny. And my mother kept worrying about me being skinny. There was a thing in the house that said, if you're skinny, you're not healthy. Absolutely. And she used to say, well, eat. I'd eat. Nothing worked. I'd eat, you know, meatloaf. I ate a lot of, you know, stuff like, a typical lunch when I was coming up from school would be Campbell's tomato soup and American cheese sandwiches. I must have eaten 20,000. 400 gallons of tomato soup. I weighed now 8.5 pounds. You know, my mother is always worried about, you know, my kid brother, incidentally, never ate at all. He did not eat from his third year through his 15th. Nothing. Did not eat anything. And he was 7'2", and he weighed 360 pounds. It was very, you know, one of those strange things. And so one day, my mother took me to see our family doctor. I'm a little kid, you know. And she kept saying, whenever your mother says, you'll have fun. You're going to like talking to Dr. Slicker. You know, there's that little secret thing inside you, you know. Dr. Slicker. You know, they put me in the back of the car. I'm all dressed up. Little did I know that I was about to have one of those real educational moments. One of the real moments. We drive to the office, and here's Dr. Slicker. He's sitting at his desk. He's got one of these things on the head. You know, I've never seen one doctor use them. That thing. I think it's just sort of a badge. You know, what they do with them, I don't know. You know, it's a big round tin can on the head there. Old Doc Slicker, you know, he's got the white coat and all that, and he had about 17 pencils sticking out here. And he was one of these guys that always talked like this, well, now, well, how are you, young man? Why, come sit on my knee, young man. Well, let me take a look inside of you now. Open your mouth and go, ah. It's got a light, see. And he goes, mm-hmm. And I think, gee, I must be pretty good. He's liking it. My mother's looking very worried. And all the while, you know, I'm still innocent about this thing. My mother said, see, I told you Dr. Slicker'd be fun. See, play with the light. He's got the light. He says, there, now, see, that's all there was to it. He's writing. He says, here, Mr. Shepherd, I think you'll find this will prepare him well for what we have to do. What we have to do. You know, I'd seen one or two movies. At that point, I was just going through my Tarzan phase. You know, Tarzan. They didn't have doctors in those movies. But I knew the doctors did something. And what the rumor was back at the garage, it was not good. Yeah. And so my mother says, oh, you say one a day for a month. Uh-huh. Any brand? You know, they don't tell you, see. And he says, no, it doesn't make any difference what you give him. Just get him anything that he likes. And make sure that he gets plenty of rest for the next month. And, well, we'll see you, young man, in a month. Little did I realize I was entering a pre-operative
a preoperative prescription had been given. Now I'm home, see. I figure I've escaped. You know how we all put evil into the back of our minds, we keep pushing it aside, like income tax. We keep saying, well, one day I'll take care of this. You know, all these millions of things. Already at that time, you know, I arrive home, I'm all glad I'm home, see, and I'm walking around the kitchen. My kid brother's jealous because he didn't go to the doctor. You know, my mother says, oh, we'll take you one day. They did. You know, and I'm digging the scene, see, and now comes supper time. This is the moment, I'll never forget this moment at supper. Now, I had this father who never talked during supper. He read the paper. He always had the Chicago Tribune, you know, with the sport page spread out, and he's sitting there in his underwear. He's eating the meatloaf, and he's bugged. He's reading about the White Sox. So he's mad, eating away there. My mother puts in front of my table, right in front of my meatloaf, a stein, you know, with the handle. My kid brother looks up and sees this. And my mother pours in the stein a bottle of beer. I'm a little kid, you know. And she says to my father, she says, Dr. Slicker told me to give Jeannie so that he'd put a little weight on him, get the vitamins. Jeannie is to get one bottle of beer every day. A bottle of beer, you know, and I'm about six. See, so I, you know, there's this beer, and it's got foam going all over you. I mean, it's a real stein of beer. It's bubbling and going all over the place. It's about that big to me, see? And the old man, he's already downed his two beers, which he had before supper. He had a six-pack after supper. Yeah, he took, you know, he'd take two cans and just chug them down. He'd chug the other one down, sit down. So I take the beer. My mother says, now drink it. You'll like it. How many times have you heard that word? You'll like it. It's good for you. Well, instinctively, a kid hates it. So I take the beer. Ooh. I mean, it's got such nice foam on it. It's so bubbly. I mean, it did not taste anything, nothing like Ovaltine. I mean, you know, at that point, I was just making the transition from Coca Malt to Ovaltine. Why, my Yoo-hoo phase was 3 years ahead. You know, so this taste, ooh, is it bitter? I mean, it was bitter. Ugh. My mother says, isn't that good? I don't want to drink it. She says, now you drink that. That's good for you. Watch, Daddy will drink one to show you. Daddy says, yeah, watch. It's pouring down, you know. You see, wasn't that good, Jeannie? So here, I'll take another one. I'll show you, you know, again. So, you know, well, I sat at the table. How many times have you gone through the scene where your mother says, now, look, you're not going to get up from this table until you finish that? Well, I knew one kid that sat for 4 years in front of a plate of parsnips. I mean, you know, he's just not going to buy it. So I take this jug, you know, and my mother keeps saying, now you drink this. Well, it took me till 9 o'clock to get rid of this bottle of beer, and I hated every bit of it. Well, the next day, you know how a kid is, you forget. Life is just very momentary. It's 4 o'clock in the afternoon, I'm out, I'm being a kid, I'm hitting Schwartz, and Schwartz is throwing rocks at Flick, you know. We're doing a whole bit. And now, all of a sudden, it's supper time. 6 o'clock and I'm hungry. I sit down. I mean, a can of beer is a lot for a kid. I mean, I had a stomach about the size of a lime, you know. And, you know, this is a big 12-ounce can of Blatz or something, see? I mean, this is real beer. And then I got so I pour it down my shirt, see? You know, and the old man, every night is saying, now look, Jeannie. Look, you want to grow up big like Daddy, right? Daddy was 4'3". Says, you want to grow up big like Daddy. All right, now here, you take it like this, see? I mean, he used to chug-a-lug it. You'd see his Adam's apple going up and down, you know. Except, see, there's nothing to it. There's nothing to it. I look up. Well, I struggled with that beer for one solid week. Every night I drank a glass of beer. Great big stein. And even on Sunday I had a stein of beer. Now it's Monday. And I come home, you know. I go through the whole scene and running around. Supper time. This is the 8th day. I sit down. There's my stein of beer. The old man is over there, you know, reading the paper, see? Well, it's a very funny thing. I knocked down that beer, you know, even before the meatloaf arrived. It tasted, you know, kind of good, see? I couldn't figure it out. It was kind of good. The old man, he's paying no attention. And then that night, I go to bed, like every, you know, 9 o'clock, I go to bed. I'm lying in a sack. It was going to be one of those pivotal nights in my life, lying in a sack, see? Everybody's asleep. The house is totally quiet, except I can hear in the distance my old man snoring. He was snoring. You could hear it, brack. You'd feel the windows go. Oh, he worked at sleeping. He did not approach sleeping passively. He attacked it. And brack. I'm lying there. It's midnight. I wake up. It's 12:30. And all of a sudden, I don't know what made me do it. I got up. I'm kind of hungry, see? I go into the kitchen. It's dark in the kitchen, see? And I go up to the refrigerator and I open it and a light comes out. And there are 5 cans of beer. I'm very innocent, you know. And so there was a little piece of meatloaf. I take the meatloaf. And without thinking, I thought, well, I mean, my mother would like this. If Dr. Slicker says one, maybe two is even better, see? So I take a can of beer, see, and I open a can of beer. Well, now I know that if I drink out of a glass, there was a little thing inside of my mind, you know, that said something about it. Like, look out. Play it cool. Don't use a glass. They'll discover the glass in the morning. So I take the can. Just like my daddy. He always drank it out of the can, you know. Oh, oh. He had this can opener. You know, he had a mink-lined can opener. Real slob art, see. I drank in this thing, see. I drank the first. Oh, it tasted great. I couldn't believe it. What they had done to beer in 1 week. What an improvement. I mean, you know, I figure, you know, they've been putting coca malt in it or something. Tasting real good, see, and it really great, see. So I drink about half of this beer, I knock it down, and all of a sudden, I am aware. In the darkness, there are eyes upon me. And standing in the kitchen door is the old man. He's there in his long johns. I got a can of beer. I say, just like Daddy. But Daddy looks at me. He says, well, you're having a beer, huh? So he takes a can of beer and goes, pom, pom, pom. We both sit down like this. The old man knocks down a beer. He says, how about another one? How about another one? Sadie gets up and he takes two more and he sits them down, pow, pow. You know, if the doctor says it, it's okay, you know. So I'm drinking my beer. See, never in my life had I gone over one very reluctant beer for dinner. One. Now I am into my third. And you know, it was funny. I never realized until that time that the wall tilted. Been living in that house all my life. I see it's like this angle, see? The old man is knocking down a beer, and suddenly the kitchen light goes on. And there, framed in the doorway, is my mother. She's wearing her chenille bathrobe. You know, it's got the egg on a lapel and her hair up in curlers, and she says, what's going on here? The old man says, well, I thought we'd just have a couple of beers. Dr. Slicker said he could have a beer, you know. And I'm under the table. Lay there, you know. And my mother, you know, she looked at the two, you know. She said, is he opening his own cans now? My father says, I don't know. I think so. You know, put a little weight on him. It's good for the kid. The old man, you know, he always thought, it's good for the kid. Look what it's done for me. You know? Well, that was the moment that there was the first absolute communication between me and Daddy. And it came on a very, very basic physiological level. And every night, you know, I'd sit down with the meatloaf, and it changed. It flopped over, the whole thing. My mother would say, now look, drink your beer slow. Don't chug a lug it. You know, I'm about 9. And so I got so that I really liked Dr. Slicker. You know, somehow I related this to Dr. Slicker. He had put me onto this good thing. And he was the guy that assigned it. And so 1 month later, I had forgotten all about that whole scene in the office, except for the beer. And 1 month later, this is the moment of total and complete education. The world of medicine. 1 month later, I come home, you know, from school, and my mother's waiting at the door. That's bad news right there. I walk in. She says, come in, Jeannie. Come on now. We're going to get dressed, and we're going to get all dressed up, and we're going to take along your Dr. Denton's. Those are pajamas. She says, we're going to take along your pajamas, and we're going to go and visit Dr. Slicker. And we're going to stay with him. Stay with Dr. Slicker? She says, yes, we're going to stay with Dr. Slicker for a couple of days, and you're going to enjoy it. He's going to have some good things for you. Some more beer? She says, well, maybe some more beer. Maybe you and Dr. Slicker can get drunk together. And you
And so we ride on. My dad took that afternoon off from work. You know the terrible feeling that you used to get when your father took the afternoon off from work to take you somewhere? Oh, boy. And I'm sitting in the back of the car. We drive up to Dr. Slicker's office. And Dr. Slicker, now, is very different. He's very official. And he's got on a coat, white coat. And he says, "Ah, young man, how are you today?" And he's got this lady with him. She's got a white dress with a white hat. He had never had that lady before. And he says, "Ah, I want you to meet, this is my nurse. You'll like her. Her name is Amy. Say hello to Jeannie, Amy." Amy's got rimless glasses. And she looks down at me and she says, "Shall I get him ready?" "Shall I get him ready?" And she takes me into this little room. And there I am. I'm a little kid, see, and I'm expecting a beer. This lady takes my shirt off. She takes my shoes off. She puts a little white thing on me. Somehow I sense danger. This white room, I sense danger. Dr. Slicker walks into the room and he says, "All right now." And another man walked in. He says, "I want you to meet Dr. Johnson. Dr. Johnson will help you too. He's a friend of mine." Dr. Johnson puts me on a big table. I'm looking up. And Dr. Johnson says, "All right." He says, "All ready to go here now. You just lie still, sonny. It's going to be all right." And the nurse has got me strapped down. I figured they're going to pour beer down. I hung on to the beer thing, see? I wanted to believe it was more beer. I mean, I didn't want to believe that what was happening was happening. They're going to give me beer, you know. When is the PAPS coming in, you know? And he says, "All right, now." He says, now you breathe deeply and count three. And he put this rag over my face with a pipe and a hose. I thought, gee, you know, they're going to squirt the hose down me. He says, "Now, do you smell anything?" And I go, "Ooh. Gone. It was the most fantastic beer I ever had. I was gone. I mean, I didn't know what hit me. Just like that, I felt it going, and I was gone. And then, you know, have you ever gone through an operation? The next thing I knew, there's this funny feeling. I look up, and I see the ceiling moving around. It's spinning. I smell that funny smell. I see all kinds of people with white coats, things, drifting, faces going by, floating up and down. Looking around, all of a sudden I see my old man. He drifts by me. He's got a tie on, see? He never put a tie on except there was a funeral, you know? I'm looking up like this, see, and I see Dr. Slicker's face dripping past. It's kind of melting and moving on in the air. It's drifting around, up and down. And then I become aware of the most fantastic sore throat in the history of the world. I got a sore throat that starts 4 feet above my head. It goes all the way down out my feet. And I see the lights drifting up and down and around. And I see Dr. Slicker. He goes past me. And he says, "Can you hear me? How do you feel?" The old man drifts by. "How is he?" If I hear my mother, you know, mothers are always saying, "There now, there now," and she drifts by, "There now, there now." And it sort of reverberated in my head like an echo, "There now, there now." And then I passed out. I drifted out into Never Never Land again. And it seemed like 8 years later, I drift back. At this time, I see the ceiling is the same old ceiling. It's my home.
I'm looking up, and it's home. I see my mother drift by again. She's got on her bathrobe. I see her hair curler. She had these aluminum rheostats. They go by, you know, and I can hear them playing Dixie, banging against each other. She says, "How are you?" "There now, there now." And the old man, I see him go by, you know, with the buttons off of his BBDs. He floats by. And I can hear my kid brother, he's under the day bed. He wants to get knocked out too, see. Whatever I got, he wanted. I'm lying there like that. Drifting by, the old man goes. I got a sore throat. And then I slowly start clawing my way back. And now, I look around. My sore throat. My mother says, "There, it'll be all right. There." And now I'm back in reality. And it suddenly begins to dawn on me. Something happened to me. And it was bad. And she says, "There. Now, how do you feel?" The old man is standing in the doorway. He says, "Ah, you'd be all right. I had mine out, too. Of course, one of them stayed in and grew. It's got roots on it now. Yeah, it's got moss on it. Oh, you'll be all right. Dr. Slicker's a good doctor." My mother says, "Here, Jeannie, would you like some ice water?" And she drifts over, and I get the ice water. See? Oh, it burned all the way down. I go, it burns. Dr. Slicker did it. Dr. Slicker hurt me. I can't drink it. It burns. And the old man is standing in the corner over there looking. The old man says, "I'll tell you what. Give him a beer." It's all right. You're going to applaud. And you know, ever since that time, I've had a warm spot down in my gizzard for Dr. Slicker. And ever since that time, when I see those beer commercials come on, way down deep inside, I feel a little tickling in the throat. And once in a while after a show, I sit down, you know, and I take this great big thing full of suds, and I look up at the ceiling, and I can smell ether. So let's give beer a big hand. It isn't often we salute beer. It's brought to us many a thing, and we'll be back next week, gang. Just think good thoughts, hang in there, and it'll work out all right.